5 Best Horror Stories. Robert Louis Stevenson, Thrawn Janet. The Reverend Murdoch Soulis was long minister of the moorland parish of Balwearie, in the Vale of Dule. A severe, bleak-faced old man, dreadful to his hearers, he dwelt in the last years of his life, without relative or servant, or any human company, in the small and lonely manse under the hanging shore. In spite of the iron composure of his features, his eye was wild, scared, and uncertain, and when he dwelt in private admonitions on the future of the impenitent, it seemed as if his eye pierced through the storms of time to the terrors of eternity. Many young persons coming to prepare themselves against the season of the Holy Communion were dreadfully affected by his talk. He had a sermon on the 1 Peter 5:8, the devil as a roaring lion, on the Sunday after every 17th of August, and he was accustomed to surpass himself upon that text both by the appalling nature of the matter and the terror of his bearing in the pulpit. The children were frightened into fits, and the old looked more than usually oracular, and were, all that day, full of those hints that Hamlet deprecated. The manse itself, where it stood by the water of Dule among some thick trees, with the shore overhanging it on one side, and on the other many cold, moorish hilltops rising towards the sky, had begun, at a very early period of Mr. Soulis's ministry, to be avoided in the dusk hours by all who valued themselves upon their prudence. And guidemen, sitting at the Clack and Ale House, shook their heads together at the thought of passing late by that uncanny neighbourhood. There was one spot, to be more particular, which was regarded with especial awe. The manse stood between the high road and the water of Dule, with a gable to each. Its bank was toward the kirk town of Balwearie, nearly half a mile away. In front of it, a bare garden, hedged with thorn, occupied the land between the river and the road. The house was 2 stories high, with 2 large rooms on each. It opened not directly on the garden, but on a causewayed path or passage, giving on the road on the one hand, closed on the other by the tall willows and elders that bordered on the stream. And it was this strip of causeway that enjoyed, among the young parishioners of Balwearie, so infamous a reputation. The minister walked there often after dark, sometimes groaning aloud in the instancy of his unspoken prayers. And when he was from home, and the manse door was locked, the more daring schoolboys ventured, with beating hearts, to follow my leader across that legendary spot. This atmosphere of terror, surrounding as it did a man of God of spotless character and orthodoxy, was a common cause of wonder and subject of inquiry among the few strangers who were led by chance or business into that unknown, outlying country. But many, even of the people of the parish, were ignorant of the strange events which had marked the first year of Mr. Soulis's ministrations, and among those who were better informed, some were naturally reticent, and others shy of that particular topic. Now and again, only one of the older folk would warm into courage over his 3rd tumbler, and recount the cause of the minister's strange looks and solitary life. 50 years sin, when Mr. Soulis come first in a Balwearie, he was still a young man, a callant, the folk said, full of book learning, and grand at the exposition, but as was natural in say younger man with nae leaving experience in religion. The younger sort were greatly taken with his gifts and his gab, but old, concerned, serious men and women were moved even to prayer for the young man, whom they took to be a self-deceiver, and the parish that was like to be say ill-supplied. It was before the days of the moderates, weary for them, but ill things are like geed. They baith come bit by bit, a pickle at a time. And there were folk even then that said the Lord had left the college professors to their ain devices, and the lads that went to study with them, what I had done meer and better sitting in a peat bog, like their forebears, or the persecution with a Bible under their oxter, and a spirit of prayer in their hearts. There was nae doubt, anyway, but that Mr. Soulis had been all lang at the college. He was careful and troubled for money things, besides the ae thing needful. He had fecker books wi' him, mair than ever been seen before in that presbytery, and a sair walk the carrier had wi' them, for they were alike to have smoored in the Dale's Ag between this and Kilmackerly. They were books of divinity, to be sure, or so they called them. But serious were our opinion, there was little service for say money, when the ale of God's word would gang in the nuke of a plaid. Then he would sit half the day and half the nicht forby, which was scant descent, writing nay less. And first they were feared he would read his sermons, and sin it proved he was writing a book himself, which was surely no fitting for any of his years and smart experience. Anyway, it behoved him to get an old decent wife to keep the mans for him, and see to his bit denners. And he was recommended to an old limmer, Janet McClure, they called her, and sae far left to himself as to be all persuaded. There was money advised him to the contrary, for Janet was made and suspected by the best folk in Balwearie. Lang o' that, she had had a wean to a dragoon. She hadna come for it for maybe 30 years, and Bairns had seen her mumbling to herself up on Keys Lone in the gloaming Wilk. Was an unco time and place for a God-fearing woman. Howsoever, it was the laird himself that first told the minister of Janet, and in they days it would have gan a fair gate to pleasure the laird. When folk told him that Janet was sib to the Dale, it was a superstition by his way of it. And when they cast up the Bible to him, and the Witch of Endor, he would threep it down their thrapples, that their days were again by, and the Dale was mercifully restrained. Weel, when it got about the clacken that Janet McClure was to be servant at a manse, the folk were fair mad wi' her, and him together. And some of the gude wives had nae better to dee than get round her door cheeks and charge her wi' her that was kent again her frae the sodger's bairn to John Tamson's twa key. She was nae great speaker. Folk usually let her gang her ain gate, and she let them gang theirs, wi' neither fair good e'en nor fair good day. But when she buckled to, she had a tongue to deave the miller. Up she got. And there was nae an old story in Balwearie, but she got somebody lout for it that day. They couldna say a thing, but she could say twa to it. Till at the inder end, the gudewives up and clawed hold of her, and clawed the coats off her back, and put her down the clacken to the water of Dewel, to see if she were a witch or no, soom or drown. The carline skirled till you could hear her at the hanging shore, and she forked like 10. There was many a good wife bur the mark of her nearest day and many a long day after. And just in the hettest of the collis hangy was should come up for his sins but the new minister. "Women," said he, and he had a grand voice, "I charge you in the Lord's name to let her go." Janet ran to him, she's fair wood with terror, and clang to him, and prayed him, for Christ's sake, save her for the comers, and they, for their part, told him how that was kent and maybe mare. "Woman," says he to Janet, "is this true?" "As the Lord sees me," says she, "as the Lord made me, no word of it. For by the bairn," she say, "I've been a decent woman of my days." Will you, says Mr. Soulis, in the name of God and before me, his unworthy minister, renounce the devil and his works? Weel, would I appear that, when he asked it that? She gave a gurn that fairly fricked it them that saw her, and they could hear her teeth play dirl together in her chafts. But there was nothing for it but the A-way or the either, and Janet lifted up her hand and renounced the deil before Emma. And now, says Mr. Soulis to the gied wives, home with ye, one and all, and pray to God for his forgiveness. And he gied Janet his arm, though she had little on her but a sark, and took her up the clachan to hear her ain door like a leddy of the land and a screegin' and laughing as was a scandal to be heard. There were mony grave folk lang o'er their prayers that nicht, but when the morn came, there was sick a fear fell upon a bowery that the bairns hid theirselves, and even the men folk stood and keekit frae their doors. For there was Janet coming down the clachan, her or her likeness, nane could tell, wi' her neck thrawn, and her head on ae side, like a body that has been hangit, and a gurn on her face, like an unstreaked corp. By and by they got used wi' it, and even speared at her to ken what was wrang, but frae that day forth she could nae speak like a Christian woman, but slavered and played click wi' her teeth like a pair of shears, and frae that day forth the name o' God cam never on her lips, whilst she would try to say it, but it micknae be. Them that kenned best said least, but they ne'er gied that thing the name o' Janet McClure, for the old Janet, by their way-at, was in muckle hell that day. But the minister was neither to hoard nor to bind. He preached about naething but the folk's cruelty that gien her a stroke of the palsy. He skelped the bairns that meddled her, and he had her up to the manse that same nicht, and dwalled there his lane wi' her under the hanging shore. Weel, time gaed by, and the idler sort commenced to think mair lickly o' that black business. The minister was weel thocht o'. He was aye late at the writing. Folk wad see his cannel doom by the dool water after 12 at e'en, and he seemed pleased wi' himself, and upsitten as at first, though a body could see that he was dwining. As for Janet, she cam and she gaed. If she did nae speak muckle afore, it was reason she could speak less then. She meddled naebody, but she was an eldricked thing to see, and name would a mistryst wi' her for baweary glebe. About the end of July there cam a spell of weather like it never was in that countryside. It was lone and het and heartless. The herds couldn't win up the black hill. The bairns were o'er weary at to play, and yet it was gusty too, with claps het wind that rummeled in the glens and bits of showers that slockened naething. We aye thocht it but to thunder on the morn, but the morn came, and the morn's morning, and it was aye the same uncanny weather, sair on folks and bestial. Of that, where the war, Nan suffered like Mr. Soulis. He could neither sleep nor eat. He told his elders, and when he was near writing at his weary book, he would be stravagoin' o'er at the countryside, like a man possessed, when a body else was blithe to keep call o' Ben the house. Aboon hanging shore in the bield o' the Black Hill, there's a bit enclosed groon wi' an iron yet, and it seems, in the old days, that was the kirkyard o' Bowery, and consecrated by the papists before the blessed licht shone upon the kingdom. It was a great how for Mr. Soulis's onyway. There he would sit and consider his sermons, and indeed it's a beeldy bit. Weel, as he came o'er the west end o' the Black Hill, ae day, he saw first twa and sin fower, and seen seven corby craws fleeing round and round aboon the old kirkyard. They flew, lie and heavy, and squawked to ither as they gaed, and it was clear to Mr. Soulis that something had put them frae their ordinaire, He wasna easy flayed, and gaed straight up to the wass. And what should he find there but a man, or the appearance of a man, sitting in the inside upon a grave? He was of a great stature, and black as hell, and his een were singular to see. Mr. Soulis had heard tell of black men, money's the time, but there was something unco about this black man that daunted him. Het as he was, he took a kind of cold grew in the marrow o' his banes. But up he spak for that, and says he, "My friend, are you a stranger in this place?" The black man answered, "Never a word." He got upon his feet, and be good to hersel to the wire on the far side, but he aye lookit at the minister, and the minister stood and lookit back, till in a minute the black man was o'er the wan rinning for the bield of the trees. Mr. Soulis, he hardly kenned why, ran after him. But he was sae for a jasket wi' his walk and the het unhailsome weather, and rin as he lickit, he got nae more than a glisk o' the black man amang the birks, till he won down to the foot of the hillside, and there he saw him, ance mair, going hap, step, and loup, or dual water to the manse. Mr. Soulis was no weel pleased that this fearsome gangrel should make sa free wi' Baweary manse, and he ran the harder and wet shoon o'er the bourne and up the walk, but the deil a black man was there to see. He stepped out upon the road, but there was naebody there. He gaed it o'er the garden, but nah, nae black man. At the hinder end, and a bit feared as was but natural, he lifted the hasp and into the manse, and there was Janet McClure before his een, wi' a thrawn craig, and nan sae pleased to see him, and he aye minded sin seen, when first he set his een upon her. He had the same cold and daidy grew. "Janet," says he, "have you seen a black man?" "A black man?" quo' she. "Save us, ye're no wise minister, there's nae black man in a Baweary." But she didna speak plain, ye mun understand, but yam-yammered, like a powny with a bit in its moo. "Weel," says he, "Janet, if there was nae black man, I have spoken with the accuser of the brethren." And he sat down, like an wi' a fever, and his teeth chittered in his heed. "Hoots," says she, "think shame to yourself, minister," and gied him a drap of brandy that she kept aye by her. Seeing Mr. Soulis gaed into his study among his books, it's a lang lay mirk charm of perishing cold in winter, and no very dry even in the top of the simmer, for the man stands near the burn. Say down he sat, and thocht o' that had come and gone since he was in Baweary, and his hame, and the days when he was a bairn and ran daffing on the braes, and that black man aye ran in his heed, like the hour come of a sang. Aye, the mair he thocked to the black man, he tried the prayer, and the words wouldna come to him, and he tried, they say, to write at his book, but he could nae mak nae mair o' that. There was whiles he thocked, the black man was at his oxter, and the swat stood upon him, could as well water. And there was other whiles, when he came to himself, like a christened bairn, and minded naething. The upshot was that he gaed to the window and stood glowering at dual water. The trees are unco thick, and the water lies deep and black under the manse. And there was Janet, washing the clays wi' her coats kilted. She had her back to the minister, and he, for his part, hardly kenned what he was looking at. Since she turned round and showed her face, Mr. Soulis had the same cold grew as twice that day afore, and it was borne in upon him what folk said, that Janet was deed lang sin, and this was a bogle in her clay-cold flesh. He drew back a pickle, and he scanned her, narrowly. She was tramping in a clies, crooning to herself, and hey, good geeders, but it was a fearsome face. Whilst she sang louder, but there was nay man born a woman that could tell the words where her sang, and while she look it sidelung down, but there was nay thing for her to look at. There gaed a schooner through the flesh upon his banes, and that was heaven's advertisement. But Mr. Soulis just blamed himself, and said, to think say ill of a poor old afflicted wife that had nae a friend for by himself. And he put up a bit prayer for him and her, and drank a little call of water, for his heart rose again the meat, and gaed up to his naked bed in the gloaming. That was a nicht that has never been forgotten in Balwearie, the nicht of the 17th of August, 1712. It had been het afore, as I have said, but that nicht, it was hetter than ever. The sun gaed down among co-looking clouds. It fell as murk as the pit. No a star, no a breath of wind. Ye couldna see your hand afore your face, and even the old folk coosed the covers frae their beds and lay petching for their breath. Wi' that he had upon his mind, it was gey and unlikely Mr. Soulis would get muckle sleep. He lay and he tumbled. The good call o' bed that got into brunt his very banes, whilst he slept and whilst he wakened, whilst he heard the timer nicked, and whilst the tyke yowling up the muir as if somebody was deed, whilst he thocked he heard boggles clavering in his lug, and whilst he saw spunkies in the room, he judged to be sick, and sick he was, little he jaloused the sickness. At the hinder end, he got a clearness in his mind, sat up in his sark on a bedside, and fell thinking Anse Myra, the black man, and Janet. He couldn't weel tell how. Maybe it was the cold to his feet, but it came in upon him wi' a spate that there was some connection between their twa, and that either or baith of them were boggles. And just at that moment, in Janet's room, which was neist to his, there came a stamp of feet, as if men were warstling, and then a loud bang, and then a wound good rishling round the four quarters of the house, and then I was Anse Mear as silent as the grave. Mr. Soulis was feared for neither man nor devil. He got his tinderbox and lit a candle, and made three steps out to Janet's door. It was on the hasp, and he pushed it open, and keeked baldly in. It was a big room, as big as the minister's ain, and plenished wi' grand old solid gear, for he had naething else. There's a four-poster bed wi' old tapestry, and a braw cabinet of ache that was fuck the minister's divinity books, and put there to be out of the gate, and a wheen duds o' Janet's lying here and there about the floor. But nay, Janet, could Mr. Soulis see, nor any sign of a contention. In he gaed, and there's few that would ha' followed him, and look it around, and listened. But there was naething to be heard, neither inside the manse, nor in a Balwearie parish, and naething to be seen, but the muckle shadows turning round the candle. And then, at ance, the minister's heart played dunt, and stood stock still, and a cold wind blew among the hairs o' his head. Whatten a weary sicht was that for the poor man's een, for there was Janet, hanging frae a nail beside the old ache cabinet. Her head aye lay on her shoulder, her een was steeked, the tongue projected frae her mouth, and her heels were 2 feet clear abune the floor. God forgive us all, thocked Mr. Soulis. Poor Janet's dead. He came a step nearer to the corp, and then his heart fair whammled in his inside, for, by what can trip it would ill beseem a man to judge, she was hinging frae a single nail and by a single worsted thread for darning hose. It's an awful thing to be alane at nicht we sicken prodigies of darkness. But Mr. Soulis was strong in the Lord. He turned and gaed his ways oot o' that room, and lockit the door ahint him, and step by step doon the stairs, as heavy as lead, and set doon the candle on the table at the stair foot. He could nae pray, he could nae think. He was dreeping wi' cold swat, and nae thing could he hear but the dunt, dunt, dunting o' his ain heart. He micht maybe have stood there an hour, or maybe twa. He minded sae little, when I o' a sudden he heard a laugh, uncanny steer upstairs, a foot gaed to and fro in the chamber while the corpse was hinging, sin the door was opened, though he minded weel that he had locked it, and sin there was a step upon the landing, and it seemed to him as if the corpse was looking ower the tail and down upon him where he stood. He took up the candle again, for he couldn't want the licht, and as saftly as ever he could, gaed straight out of the manse, and to the far end of the causeway. It was aye pit mirk, the flame of the candle, when he set it on the ground, brunt steady and clear, as in a room, nae thing moved. But the dual water seeping and sabbing doon the glen, and yon unhaly footstep that came plodding down the stairs inside the manse. He kenned the foot or wheel, for it was Janet's, and at ilka step that came a wee thing nearer, the cord got deeper in his vittles. He commended his soul to him that made and keepeth him, and, O Lord, said he, give me strength this night to war against the powers of evil. By this time the foot was coming through the passage for the door. He could hear a hand skirt along the wire, as if the fearsome thing was feeling for its way. The saws tossed and maned together. Alongside came o'er the hills, the flame of the candle was blown aboot, and there stood the corp of Thrawn Janet, wi' her grogram gown and her black mutch, with a heed eye upon the shoulder, and the gurn still upon the face of it, leaving, ye would ha' said, deed, as Mr. Soulis weel kinned, upon the threshold o' the manse. It's a strange thing that the soul of a man should be thirled into his perishable body. But the minister saw that, and his heart did nae break. She did nae stand there lang. She began to move again, and came slowly toward Mr. Soulis, where he stood under the saws. Ah, the life of his body, ah, the strength of his spirit, were glowering frae his een. It seemed she was gone to speak, but wanted words and made a sign with her left hand. There came a clap of wound, like a cat's foof. Oot gaed the candle. The saws screeged like folk, and Mr. Soulis kenned that, live or die, this was the end of it. "Witch, beldam, devil," he cried, "I charge you by the power of God, be gone, if you be dead to the grave. If you be damned, to hell." And at that moment the Lord's ain hand, out of the heavens, struck the horror war it stood. The old, deed, desecrated corp of the witch-wife, sae lang keep it frae the grave, and here selled round by deals, load up like a brun-stained spunk, and fell in ashes to the grund. The thunder followed, peal on dirling peal, the raring rain upon the back of that, and Mr. Soulis loped through the garden hedge and ran with skellock upon skellock for the clacken. That same morning, John Christie saw the black man pass the muckle cairn, as it was chapping six, before ached. He gaed by the change house at Knockdow, and no long after, Sandy McClellan saw him going linking down the braes frae Kilmacally. There's little doubt, but it was him that dwalled sae lang in Janet's body. But he was a wild last, and since in the dale has never fashed us in Bowery. But it was a sere dispensation for the minister. Lang, lang he lay raving in his bed, and frae that hour to this, he was the man ye ken the day.